Good evening. Merry Christmas. So, many years ago, my sister and her boyfriend at the time and myself took our friend Betty camping for her birthday. She had always wanted to go, and it was something that her family never did. So we surprised her and took her on her first camping trip down by the Spanish Peaks. We set up camp, made a fire, grilled dinner, chatted around the campfire, and eventually retired for the night. We had two tents, and so I shared a tent with Betty. I woke up just as the sky was turning light and noticed Betty was not in the tent with me. So I got up thinking she would be around the campfire, and she wasn't. She wasn't in the car. And I walked around and I could not find her. Panic set in. And I woke up the other two and told them that Betty was missing. We grabbed flashlights and made a search plan and went looking for Betty. And it's important to know that Betty had absolutely no sense of direction. She literally would get lost going around the block. And that's the truth. So the three of us looked for an hour and couldn't find her. We were in full panic mode. And I thought, how am I going to explain to her parents that we took her for a camping trip for a fun birthday treat and I lost your daughter? And that, I knew, was not going to be a pleasant conversation. Moments later, here comes Betty strolling into camp with a big smile on her face. We were both relieved and angry at the same time. She said she had gotten cold and tried to light a fire and couldn't. So she saw a fire in the distance and went visiting whoever was at that campsite. And then as the sun came up, she climbed a hill and found a warm rock on which to sleep. And she acted like we would know that that is what everybody does when they're cold. So if you've ever experienced looking for someone who was lost, you know the angst, the fear, the terror within your soul because they are not where they should be. And if so, we can certainly relate to what Mary and Joseph were going through in searching for Jesus. The flip side of searching for someone who is lost is being lost ourselves. We are open to feeling those moments of fear, angst, terror. And some of us have experienced both sides of this coin. And I know that I've had the experience of being lost, and lost in the way of wandering away from God. And it is a cold, dark place full of fear and angst. Family today has many cultural and moral connotations and challenges for all people and for us Christians. We are familiar with those who may belong to separated, divorced, blended, or single-parent families. And for some people, therefore, the holy family of Jesus, Mary, and Joseph may seem to exist on another planet, or at least be light years away from 21st century relevance. Yet the gospel truth that the word of God for this feast affirms that family life is a kind of school of deeper humanity that is permeated by the Spirit of Christ. It is a challenge to live in mutual respect and love, for parents to honor the dignity of their children, and children respect the dignity of their parents, each one bound to the other in the love that God has lavished upon us. From the gospel reading, our understanding of what we usually call the finding in the temple has often been sabotaged by artistic depictions of a precocious child Jesus, haloed and white clad, lecturing and even berating the religious teachers. Yet, if we are attentive to the text, Jesus is described as first listening to the temple teachers before asking questions at what was a customary festival and Sabbath question and answer session, as opposed to the judicial one. Searching and finding are important gospel things in Luke. They reflect the human experience that so often our questing involves questioning, in the hope that we will find something more, more love, more wisdom, more truth. Any parent or guardian can appreciate Mary and Joseph's desperate search for and relief at finding Jesus. But there is another search, another finding that is of central importance. It hangs painfully on Jesus' response to his mother's question, "Child, why have you treated us like this?" The first words of Jesus in Luke's gospel are his response. "Why were you looking for me? Did you not know that I must be busy in my Father's affairs?" The affairs that will take Jesus through a life of obedience, through another Passover of pain, another 3-day loss in the tomb, and into his new and risen life. The most significant and developmental task of adolescence is the search for and gradual finding of one's identity. And as Alan Culpepper comments, what defines one's identity, family ties, religious experience, a sense of vocation, a personal creed, or one's dreams and ideals. For Mary and Joseph, as for all parents, there is a pain of allowing this child his independence, his identity, loving him, not possessing him, or punishing him, but not fully understanding him. Surely, a sword passes also through Joseph's heart, as in response to Mary's word about your father and I, and as if gently contradicting her, Jesus refers to my father. For us, for Joseph, commitment to gospel priorities will always cause us some pain. Parents know this in a special way and in a poignant way. And for now, this Passover of the adolescent Jesus is a theological sign of what is to come. After this, Jesus returns to Nazareth with Mary and Joseph and is obedient to them. In the verse preceding this gospel, Luke had written of the growth of Jesus in human and divine wisdom after his presentation in the temple. This last verse of this temple incident with Luke ends in his narrative of Jesus' childhood is again a comment that it was in this human family that such growth continued. An aspect of doing his father's will was his openness to being graced by the precious relationships of his family at Nazareth. Children and parents in every age and culture are meant to be grace for one another. Mary and Joseph could not fully understand who Jesus was, and we cannot even understand ourselves as God's children. Says John, "For what we are to be so wonderfully in the future has not yet been revealed to us. So we live in faith and in hope that one day we shall be like God, seeing him as he really is." Our faith and hope must be expressed in obedience to God and the love of one another, as Jesus has told us and the Spirit enables us. And as I've shared before, in Benedictine spirituality, to obey is to listen with the ear of our hearts. Just as every family is called to be a domestic church, so the church is called to be a family of God. I'd like to share with you one final little story, and it's one of my favorite stories, that I hope you will also find applicable to your lives from today's gospel. This story is an excerpt from Anne Lamott's book, Traveling Mercies. And the story goes like this. When this little girl was about 7, her best friend got lost one day, and the little girl ran up and down the streets of the big town where they lived, but she couldn't find a single landmark. She was very frightened. Finally, a policeman stopped to help her, and he put her in the passenger seat of his car, and they drove around until she finally saw her church. "You can let me out now. This is my church, and I can always find my way home from here." Anne Lamott continues to say, "And that is why I have stayed so close to my church, because no matter how bad I'm feeling, how lost or lonely or frightened, when I see the faces of the people at my church and hear their tawny voices, I can always find my way home." So whether you attend Mass here regularly, attend occasionally, or are visiting from out of town, we hope you feel welcome here today, because you are welcome home.